It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Spring is here and the grass is growing. Maybe your lawn is lush and green. Maybe it's not. This hour, we'll start off with some lawn advice and wisdom from ISU Extension turfgrass specialist Adam Tomes. Horticulturist Cindy Haynes will also join us in a few minutes, and she and Adam will answer all of your horticultural questions. Adam, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. And all right, let's start with some spring lawn chores. Of course, the grass is growing. Some go-getters have already been out there mowing. Not at my house, but I've seen it happen. So what do we need to be thinking about with our lawns right now?
Sure. So right now is a really good time, and I'm getting a lot of calls about, you know, do I fertilize or not? And the answer is yes. Absolutely. Now is a great time to feed your yard. And, of course, like we always say, we want to have you apply a slow-release fertilizer to the yard that's better for the environment and gives you a more even feeding over the course of the summer with a slow-release fertilizer. Another major thing right now is if you're concerned about keeping crabgrass at bay from your yard, you'll want to look at some sort of a pre-emergent herbicide application as well. Now is the time to do that. The key is to put out that pre-emergent herbicide before the crabgrass germinates. So that is one thing. Another thing to keep in mind for many homeowners is if you have bare spots in your yard, do not put out a pre-emergent herbicide if you're going to seed those areas, because that will also prevent the grass from coming up the way you want it. So those are kind of three big tips right now to keep in mind.
All right. And I know a lot of people gravitate toward the corn meal gluten for an organic option for a pre-emergent, and used over a period of years, that's a really effective way to deal with crabgrass. Does the same hold true if you've got bare spots? Do you have to avoid the corn gluten meal too?
The corn gluten meal will also prevent a lot of grass from coming up as well. However, keep in mind that the corn gluten meal works two parts. One, by inhibiting germination, but also it works as a fertilizer. So you can kind of naturally thicken your yard with applications of corn gluten meal over the years. So it will fill in those bare spots. And we always say our best defense against any kind of weeds is a well-fertilized yard, a healthy yard.
All right. Well, and of course, if you are having trouble with your lawn, Adam can answer your questions. But over the past few weeks, Adam, we've been getting a lot of calls from people who are looking for alternatives to that traditional Kentucky bluegrass lawn that, of course, was the status quo for so very long and still is. But let's talk a little bit about the grasses that are part of that traditional lawn. These are cool season grasses. Tell me about them.
Right. So traditionally, we've had cool season grasses. Kentucky bluegrass and perennial ryegrass and mixtures of those is what we've used for years and years. In recent years, we've seen more interest in grasses that, you know, handle drought tolerance or that summer drought period a little longer. You know, our cool season grasses like Kentucky bluegrass and perennial rye, when it gets hot and it stops raining, they, you know, turn kind of a dormant or a yellow color, and so people don't like that. So there's other grasses out there that would stay greener during those periods longer, and a couple examples of those are tall fescue. And tall fescues come a long ways, especially the turf-type tall fescues, in being more drought-tolerant, and they look very close and similar to Kentucky bluegrass. And then fine fescue is another one, and this is a very low-maintenance grass, so it's going to require less mowing, less fertilizer than Kentucky bluegrass or perennial rye. And it's actually very ideal for shady areas of yards or fine fescues. So those are both cool season grasses that people don't necessarily think about, but they require less water, lower fertilization, in some cases less management with thatch as well, compared to Kentucky bluegrass and perennial rye.
So if I saw a yard with tall fescue or fine fescue, would I be able to visually tell the difference between that and a Kentucky bluegrass yard? You probably could, but would I?
Yeah, no, 90% of people don't know. And in fact, a lot of yards have these grasses in them, and they never know until it turns, you know, drought conditions, and that part of the yard is still green. Mm. And then I get a lot of pictures sent to me that says, hey, what is this? And so then I tell people, and then they're like, oh, I want my whole yard that. So,
well, and
so
of course,
you really don't notice till it's hot and dry.
Right. And of course, I think watering the lawn, a lot of people still water the lawn to try to keep it green through the summer. But I also think that fewer and fewer people are doing that. So that makes these other options a lot more attractive.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Now, you said that they're good for shade. Are they good for sun as well?
Yeah, tall fescue is going to be better for sun than fine fescue. And so keep that in mind. You know, if you don't have any trees or your trees were, you know, destroyed by the derecho, you're going to want to gravitate more towards tall fescue than fine fescue.
All right. And if I have a mix of tall fescue and fine fescue, can I seed that and then whatever grows gets to decide how if it thrives in that area? Or do I have to be pretty careful about my application of seed?
No, you can put those two together and put that out. That's, you know, fairly common. In fact, a lot of shade mixes that you would buy at the store contain fine fescue in them as well. And what they do is they kind of let nature take its course. So if it's heavy shade, the fine fescue is going to dominate. If it's more sun, it's going to be one of the sun-loving cultivars or varieties.
All right. That's nice that it knows where to grow and how to grow without yep. me making those decisions for it. So you mentioned perennial ryegrass. Where does that fit into this equation?
Yeah, perennial ryegrass is going to be more of our traditional type grasses that we have. So it's a cool season grass that germinates very quickly, but doesn't necessarily like the heat. In some winters, it actually gets too cold for it as well. So it's kind of a placeholder in there that it, you know, comes up quick, gives you some relief of, oh, great, I've got green grass. But it's going to be more like Kentucky bluegrass as far as that goes for behavior.
All right. And last week, we had quite a discussion about buffalo grass. So there are other grasses. We've talked about the cool season grasses, and they're the ones that might not look so great in the middle of July. But there are also warm season grasses. So tell me about those grasses.
Yeah. So warm season grasses, there's more and more interest in those every year in the state. I can tell by the calls that I get. And what they are is they're typically more of a southern type grass. So they prefer the hot, drier conditions that we have during the summer months. And so what happens is they'll green up typically when it's 75 or 80 degrees, and they will grow as long as it's warm. And then they actually go dormant and turn kind of that yellow color in with the first frost or second frost in the cool temperatures, and then they don't grow. So with those grasses, that would be like buffalo and zoysia grass would be the ones that are best for Iowa. And those grasses typically, you know, you're going to mow, fertilize, do all of your maintenance stuff during the summer months. So during June, July, and August is when you're taking care of those grasses, and that's when they look the best. The rest of the year, it's going to be kind of a yellow off-color looking grass compared to the traditional green that you see.
Right. So if you are the only person in your neighborhood with buffalo grass, your lawn's going to look really different from your neighbor's lawn.
Yes, yes, it's going to look very different.
All right, and you might get some calls about it, possibly. But so it would be that buff color or really relatively brown until things got warm, so late May.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, typically, you know, Memorial Day through Labor Day is when those grasses are going to look green and look good.
All right, and that can be a tremendous benefit because, again, so many lawns do go dormant and turn brown in the middle of summer, but that's a pretty big trade-off for a lot of people to say, okay, it's going to be brown all spring and brown all fall, but lush and green in July.
Exactly. And, you know, if you're one person that doesn't like to water your yard, these are the grasses that you want to consider there because that's, you know, you really don't have to typically add any water to these grasses to keep them looking good during the summer.
Now, is there any kind of difference with mowing and the rate of growth?
Yeah, so buffalo grass is going to be a very low-maintenance grass. So, you know, you don't have to mow it as often. It's, you know, traditionally it grew on the prairies, and so it's native to the U.S., and it hasn't, you know, not a whole lot of breeding efforts have gone on through the years, so it's very slow mowing. So you wouldn't mow this very often, maybe two times a month, even during the active growing times. And then zoysia grass is going to be, it's actually comes out of kind of Southeast Asia. And so it's going to grow a little bit more often, and you're going to have to mow it. It's going to produce a denser turf as far as that goes, too. So it's going to prevent a lot of weeds because it grows so densely. A lot of weeds can't establish in it, so it's got that benefit. But you are going to have to mow it probably once a week during the summer months.
Do you have to make a decision between cool season grasses and warm season grasses? We were talking about that blend of grass seed earlier. Can you have both?
Yeah, so you could have both. There are plenty of yards, actually, that I get pictures of throughout the state that have both. And it just depends on your tolerance level for, you know, if it's a warm season grass, it's going to have a big, basically yellow or dormant looking spot in your yard right now. And if you're okay with that, that's, you know, perfectly fine. Just don't fertilize that area until the summer months. And, you know, you fertilize the other areas right now, but not the warm seasons, and then kind of switch that around during the summer and fertilize the warm season areas of your yard and kind of let the sunlight dictate, you know, what thrives best in your yard.
There's been a big movement toward planting native plants, native grasses, native shrubs in people's yards. It sounds like buffalo grass meets that definition, although it's not typically what we would think about when somebody's trying to put in a plot of prairie or something like that.
Right. Yep. Yeah, it is a native grass, and if you never mow it, it does grow up and look more like a typical prairie grass, but it does meet that definition for sure.
And if you want to try something like buffalo grass or zoysia grass, would you recommend terminating the grass that you have growing in your lawn?
I probably would, just from the standpoint that it's going to give those other grasses a better chance at establishment. And the other thing I should warn people is, if you're going to try some of these warm season grasses like buffalo or zoysia, you're going to want to plant those during their optimal growing conditions. So you're going to want to prep the yard so you can plant it right around Memorial Day, so it has the whole summer to establish.
All right, so which is a very different practice than the cool season grasses, which we're going to tell you to plant mid-August.
That's right. Yeah, kind of the opposite. So.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Adam Tomes is here with us, Iowa State University Extension turf grass specialist, horticulture specialist. Cindy Haynes is going to join us in just a moment. And Adam and Cindy will answer all of your questions about the things you'd like to grow or grow better. We'll talk a little bit about alternative ground covers as well when Cindy joins the conversation. You can join with your questions, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been talking about lawns with turf grass specialist Adam Tomes of Iowa State University Extension. And Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist Cindy Haynes is now here with us. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning, Charity. How are you?
I'm good. And I've been telling myself over and over again that this extended cool period is really great for flowers, that the flowers are lasting longer even though I'm cold. And that's pretty much true, right?
It is. It is. The flowers, the forsythia, have been blooming for 3 weeks in my garden. So it's been fantastic. This nice cool period has been great for the daffodils. Things are still progressing. The tulips are starting to come. But yes, it's been really great for kind of maintaining some of those flowers, because often we go really hot really fast and things disappear pretty quickly. So enjoy the cooler weather, because we have a little more flowers. We can appreciate those flowers. Maybe just a little bit longer.
All right. And of course, we are seeing wildflowers blooming. Mm-hmm. Bluebells, my favorite, are out there, and spring
yes.
beauties and Dutchman's breeches are out there, and hopefully they'll last a little bit longer. Redbud trees are starting to bloom.
Yes.
Is the Iowa State University campus starting to look beautiful?
It is looking great. The red buds are starting to peak right now. I took my students into the woods to look at wildflowers this last week. The Dutchman's breeches, the bloodroot, the spring beauties, all of those things are up. The violets are up all over the place, too. So campus is gorgeous right now.
All right. So bundle up and go outside.
Right.
And today's beautiful. It's going to be a lovely weekend, so you don't even have to bundle, but get out there and enjoy those beautiful flowers. If you have questions for Cindy or Adam, give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I already have a lot of questions, but Cindy, since we were talking so much about lawns, I do want to just talk about the fact that grass is not your only option when you're talking about
right.
your lawn. And I feel like more and more people are looking for alternatives. So how do you start exploring different kinds of ground cover?
Right. So there are a number of ground covers that could be used as an option In particularly those shady areas or those areas of your lawn that you just want to kind of let go. So when you think about ground cover as alternatives, these are, you know, they're not going to be as good to play football on or soccer on, but they can look lush and green without the care and maintenance that you would normally, you know, use for a typical lawn. So ground covers like vinca are very low growing. And are about the same height as some typical lawns. There's also another ground cover called liriope, which looks more like grass and does really well in a shady area. Maybe I like putting this on a slope where I don't want to mow, a slope in the shade. And then there's some native ground cover options too, like barren strawberry, which is native to the Midwest, that looks like, you know, this really low growing strawberry plant that flowers, but because it's called barren strawberry, it doesn't actually produce any fruit. And barren strawberry can go in sun or shade. So there's some options out there, but you need to plan for it carefully.
Right. And Adam, of course, as Cindy was saying, the turf is great if you've got kids that are going to run around or you want to play soccer games and have football. So there is something to be said for turf grass still, Adam. I'm not trying to be a propagandist against it.
Yep.
All right. Let's get to questions here, and you can join the conversation on the phone, 866-780-9100. Bev sent this email question, Cindy. My rhubarb is already trying to go to seed before stocks are ready to harvest. What is up with that?
I don't know. I noticed that occasionally we will see rhubarb that will flower earlier than normal, and it tends to be kind of an every other year, every third year kind of a thing. I'm not going to say I'm going to blame it on the weather, but that's odd for it to already start forming seed before it's got some really nice stalks. So what I might suggest that she do is cut off that flower stalk and see if that energy gets diverted back into the plant so that it produces more foliage and those stalks that you can then harvest.
All right.
And if you cut it off really early, maybe it'll do that.
And that's advice throughout the season, right? People don't want their rhubarbs to go to seed.
Absolutely. Because we want all of that extra energy to go back into the plant so that it produces bigger stalks. It's got a pretty flower. But yeah, this is the one that we try and remove so that we get better rhubarb.
All right. And Adam, Sam's got a question for you. He says, there are a lot of ads now for liquid aerators. Are these a scam? Do they do anything?
You know, I've gotten a lot of questions on that as well. I honestly haven't seen any research that really backs up that liquid aeration right now. There's nothing better than pulling a core. Well, they might maybe change some soil properties in a very heavy soil. Most of the Iowa soils, they're not going to do anything.
Okay. What are they? I don't even fully understand what the idea is behind them.
Sure. A lot of times they're a liquid solution of like a gypsum or, you know, they might have some lime or something like that. And so they're trying to loosen the soil that way. Typically the application rates are listed are too low to really do anything. And it's actually, you know, better to actually physically pull a core to allow air down into the soil and actually disrupt that and try to work compost in as opposed to spraying something over the top.
Okay. And Cindy, I think I know the answer to this one, but Brenda in Elgin says, I have a well-established 20-plus-year-old asparagus patch that has gotten quite weedy. There's quack grass, burdock, and creeping Charlie throughout the bed. How can I eliminate the weeds without harming my asparagus?
There is no good answer for this one. Weeds in asparagus are really tough. So hand removal is usually your best option, and maybe a little bit of mulch so that the asparagus can outcompete. This requires a lot of persistence and is a lot of work, and sometimes means that you need to consider maybe moving and starting over that asparagus patch somewhere else. I probably wouldn't eliminate this asparagus patch this year because I'm sure it's very productive, but I might find another place to start an asparagus patch that I know I'm going to harvest in about 2 or 3 years that maybe has fewer weeds. and still harvest off of this patch and cuss every time I have to go out there and hand weed it.
So what
when I'm getting an asparagus.
If I'm establishing a new asparagus patch, how do I keep this from happening to that patch?
It will eventually happen to the new patch as well. You can do a little better job sometimes of mulching, as it gets established. I also tell people that the first few years, if you do a really good job of weeding, then asparagus is, it will shade out most anything else. My little asparagus patch shades out everything except for the tree seedlings that come up. So I've got this mulberry that will just not go away. But everything else, I can kind of, keep it with some straw and some mulch in check, I guess you could say. Some people will go out and think that they can, apply Roundup to these areas before the asparagus comes up. And that's really tricky. You have to be very careful. If you're going to do that, I'm going to tell you to do it with a foam paintbrush and just paint on each individual weed leaf and say die at the same time, and then keep your fingers crossed that it doesn't impact your asparagus patch.
Okay, and that seems risky because, of course, you're planning to eat the asparagus as well.
Absolutely. So you got to be very careful in that application. So and you have to say die at the same time because it won't work otherwise.
Okay, with a lot of anger, like really forcefully as you do that. All right. You can do that while you hoe and pull too, though. I certainly have done a little bit of that myself. All right.
This is true. Was that the answer you were going to come up with?
Hoe and
Charity?
Pull. That's okay. What I figured.
That's it.
All right. The worst answer that we can get usually.
Right.
Other than just abandon it and start over. When you said both. All right. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. John has a question for you, Adam. He says, I have two dogs that are really hard on the turf. I have trouble keeping it free of bare patches. Most of the topsoil was removed due to construction several years ago. If I put in topsoil, how deep do I need to put it in? And then what is a good grass species to plant or sod to lay?
Yeah, so that's a pretty common question. You probably need 4 to 6 inches of topsoil if you don't have any there. Another option that might be a good consideration in this situation is to get a couple inches of topsoil, maybe two, and then 2 inches of compost and kind of rototill that together. And that'll kind of create a real nice nutrient-rich subbase. And then I would just go ahead and sod. Since you have dogs there, at least you could get that yard established quickly. And then because the dogs like to run and use the same areas over and over again, you're probably going to have to add seed each year.
All right. And sod seems like the better option there because you'd have to keep the dogs out of that area for a long time to get the seed to establish, right?
Yeah, you're going to have, pretty much a whole season, ideally, that you'd like to keep the dogs out of that area. Whereas you put sod in within, 3-4 weeks that sod's established and the dogs can go back to using that. And that kind of allows you to spread the dogs around, for where they use in the yard and beat up that, maybe the other parts of the yard won't get so wore out then either. So sod's the way to go, I think.
All right, let's go to the phones. William is on the line in Anamosa. Hi, William.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good. What's your question?
Good. Mine's real quick, and I can hang up and probably listen to the answer.
All right.
I've got some apricot trees, and I always have trouble getting a crop from them. I live in a rural area. It's maybe not quite as warm as the city, but they're in full blossom. But the pollinators aren't really out because of this cold weather. And I'm wondering, is there a way I can like artificially pollinate them? I'm not sure about how to I have four of them. So is there a way I can collect the pollen and maybe pass it from tree to tree? Anyway, that's my question.
All right, Cindy?
Yeah, no, apricots are really lovely. Apricots and peaches, they do bloom in very, very early. And sometimes that does become a bit of an issue. The other issue that we have with apricots and peaches is because they bloom so early, sometimes they get blasted by a spring frost. So those are maybe the reasons why we don't get as much fruit production as normal. Apricots like Moon Gold and Sun Gold are more hardy in Iowa than some of the others, so because they bloom a little bit later. Pollination, you know, the bees are out there. I've seen the bees. I might still see if the bees are going to do their work, because they are a much better pollinator than you are. But if you want to do this...
No offense, William.
No offense, because they're just built that way. But if you want to do this, yeah, it's a Q-tip. It's taking pollen from one flower to the other, to the next one. Ideally, you're going from one tree to another as well, so that you're kind of really making sure you get a good cross-pollination. This could be a fun experiment. I could see doing this with kids and practicing this and then labeling those that you cross-pollinated and then see if that is more productive. So see if you're a better pollinator than a bee.
and let us know if you are. That would be really, really impressive.
That would be a lot of fun. It's a lot of work and it's a lot of tedious work. But it can be effective. It might be more effective next year if you really want a lot of apricots or peaches is to, you know, have a beehive nearby.
All right. William, thanks a lot for your call. Edgar's on the line next. And Carol, hi, Edgar.
Hi. Thank you for having me. How are you today?
Good. What's your question?
You know, my wife and I had a weeping willow tree last year. Unfortunately, we lost it, and we attributed it to the drought. But also, you know, we couldn't water it because we had a water restriction ourselves. This year, we just got a new pussy kale weeping willow. It's a short one, okay. a dwarf weeping willow, I believe it's called. And we want to make sure that it thrives. What would be your advice as far as soil, maybe? And my wife specifically wants to know if a juniper will be a good companion to it.
Right, right. So willows are really tough. All willows are really tough. They do well in kind of a moister soil, so that weeping willow is often planted near a pond or a stream because it can tolerate that, you know, higher moisture content in the soil. And this dwarf willow will probably be exactly the same. They're usually pretty fast growing, so you might need to water if we have another extended drought. You really don't have to worry too much about the type of soil. I've seen willows do pretty well in even clay soils because they stay a little moister. So I would just plant this as soon as you can, maybe water it to get it established. I might stake it or protect it from rabbit or other animals because that's also apparently pretty tasty to some of them and watch it grow because it should do pretty well. Good choice, by the way. And junipers, we have some problems with junipers and certain diseases as being a secondary host, but I don't think we have that issue with willow. So I think you'll be okay.
All right, Edgar, thanks a lot for your call. And here's a quick question before we get to the break. Maybe too quick. Marlene in Ankeny says, can I still transplant hostas? They're about 3 to 4 inches tall right now.
Absolutely. Hostas are tough. This is a perfect time to transplant them, dig it up, move it, water it well. And I don't think hosta will miss a beat.
All right. Well, good. More quick questions then. From Lynn, do you plan, in the horticulture department, do you plan to have demonstration gardens and open houses in 2021?
Yeah, we do have some field days planned in the fruit and vegetable field days. That I think Adam can talk about the turf field days. But the home demonstration gardens, not this year because of COVID. So last year we took a break and this year as well. But it will be coming back. So, but it'll probably be 2022.
All right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. With me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Adam Tomes, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. You can join the conversation 866-780-9100. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Adam Tomes. He is ISU Extension Turfgrass Specialist and Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Cindy Haynes is also here, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist and Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Karen is on the line next in Marion. Hi, Karen.
Good morning. Hi. I have a number of starts of redbud trees, anywhere from 1 to 3 feet, maybe about half a dozen to eight of them, that just landed in my yard from somebody's seeds a couple of years ago. And I wanted to know when the right time is to transplant them to where I want them to be.
Right. So you can do that in early spring. I'm guessing they're small enough. They're probably not blooming, right now. So this might be a good time to try. Yeah, it might be a good time to move them before they fully leaf out. You're going to have to baby them just a little bit because they found the place that they like. And anytime you transplant them, you're going to do a little bit of root damage. So get as much of the root ball as you can and that soil and move them and transplant them as quickly as you can. And then water them as needed throughout the growing season. But now's a pretty good time if you can do it. And it's cool. So that actually will be to your benefit if you could do that fairly soon.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Karen. We've got
nice plant.
Yeah, we got a lawn question for you, Adam, from Carol in Des Moines. Hi, Carol.
Oh, is it I?
Yes, it's you.
I don't think this is a long question.
Okay.
I am concerned about the persistent invasion of wild violets into my lawn.
Okay, and you want to get rid of those is your hope?
Yeah, I love them, but they kill the grass, and then you can't walk on your lawn.
Well, Adam, that sounds like a lawn question to me. You can send it in a different direction if you disagree.
No, that's very much for me. So a couple things here, just diagnosing. One is that you might need to up your fertilization a little bit. If the wild violets are out competing your grasses there, they're probably could use a little bit more nitrogen fertilizer. So you might want to consider, I'm not sure if you're fertilizing in the spring and the fall, but you might want to make sure to do that.
I'm not.
The other thing, okay. So you might want to start there. That'll help, allow the grass to kind of fight back. Obviously, if they've taken over an area, you'll probably have to do something to remove it. And there's a couple different options that you could have. Obviously, if you slowly over time, you might be able to just fertilize it or use like the corn gluten meal products to try to help thicken the lawn and kind of fight back against it. And then add seed as you go as well. The other option, if you want to use a chemical type treatment to immediately take it out. There's plenty of broadleaf herbicides out there. And the time we always say to spray, though, for those is in the fall, specifically after the first frost, because that's going to give you the best control of the weed. And the other thing is that there won't be any blooms on there for the pollinators to get mixed up in, so there will be no damage to them either. So we want to wait till after the first frost really to spray if we're going to try to control the wild violet.
All right. So just try to make your grass as healthy as possible right now is the action item for today, right, Adam?
Yep. Just add fertilizer right now to make it competitive, and then go ahead and try to fight it in the fall.
All right, Carol, thanks a lot for your call. Lisa's up next in West Des Moines. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question on apple tree planting. We've had apple and cherry trees in the past that are planted on a hilltop, and they've been pretty good for a while, except the cherry trees did especially well, but the apple trees, one of them, I had a really nice crop 1 year, and that was it. And so we've got some new trees, because it's been a while since we planted. But we're planting them farther down the hill. When we put the other trees on, because they're at the hilltop, there's a lot of clay soil. So we used some product, I can't remember the name, and it was supposed to help to break up the soil so the roots could grow better. But we've dug the holes for the new trees farther down the hill, and it's good black dirt. And so I don't know if I need to use that, whatever the product was. And also, do you have any tips for getting a good crop? I know sometimes apple trees grow a good crop every second or third year, I've heard, but I just haven't had very good luck with apple trees. So any tips you have?
Sure. So it sounds like the soil on the slope is a little bit better than what you had before, and that's great. And on a slope, it should be fairly well drained. So this sounds like a great soil site for the apples. I don't know that I would use whatever that product is, because if it's that good Iowa black soil and it's draining well, it's probably sufficient. And you want to make sure that the roots are growing in all the soil, so amending might prevent the roots from growing outside of the amended soil. So in planting, plant them well in just the soil that is actually there. For apples, for harvesting and for continuing harvest, there are some things that you need to do, you know, every year, every other year. After you plant them, it's going to take a few years before they really establish well to start to flower and fruit. And then usually we do some regular pruning in the winter to limit excessive, you know, suckering or water sprouts on some of them. And then maybe some regular fertilizer as well the first few years to kind of get them well established. And then you also have to consider with apples, there are a number of pests, diseases, and insect pests. So there, you have to be aware if you're going to need to spray for any of these pests that might be damaging to some of the fruit. But that's a little bit down the road. So I think the next couple of years, just get these trees growing, water them well if there's a drought because they're on a slope. They probably won't keep a lot of that moisture. And then start thinking about the pruning in the next 2 or 3 years, and then maybe a little bit of fertilizer.
All right.
I'd also recommend with apples, it's always best to have two different cultivars so that they cross-pollinate. You usually get better production that way.
All right. Good luck, Lisa. Let's do a few email questions here from Brenda for you, Adam. We just had to install a new septic system, so our lawn was very disrupted. We live in rural northern Johnson County. What's the best way to reestablish a lawn? Is sod our best option at this time? Grass would be more economical.
Yeah, that's a good question. Depends on your patience level. You know, sod's going to be green and done in pretty much a week as far as, you know, looking good. And then within a month, it's fully established. The other option is if you want to seed it, you know, we're still early enough in the spring. I'd be more nervous if you were asking this question at the end of May. So you could go ahead and, you know, make sure that the disturbed area is as smooth as possible. If you feel like a lot of the subsoil was brought up, then you want to amend in some compost right now. That would be good to try to help improve the quality of the soil that's there. And then go ahead and seed it and start watering it. So I still feel like you have a time window here this spring that you could seed your yard, definitely, but start on it fairly soon.
All right. And Cindy from Judy, I have purchased several perennial bushes in pots like flowering pink almond rotundum. Prunus?
Rhododendron.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We've got a spelling issue and a pronunciation issue here. So I'm in trouble. Anyway, and I'd like to know if I can plant them now. If I can, do I fertilize and how often should I water them?
Right. So yes, you probably can plant them now. Some of these might be in bloom or starting to bloom, but if you can get them in the ground pretty quickly, if they've been acclimated to outdoor temperatures, they'll actually perform pretty well. And then you give them, you know, the whole season, spring, summer, and fall to kind of establish. Water them well at planting. Do a good job at planting so that they're not buried too deeply, because rhododendron doesn't like it wet. And those roots will kind of rot pretty quickly. And rhododendron, so read the label, because some of these prefer a little more shade and some of them might prefer a little more sun. So make sure to read the label to make sure that you know you're planting it in the right light situation, as well as a good well-drained soil.
All right. Here's one for you, Adam, from Ellen in West Branch. We have a lot of vole tracks throughout our lawn. Will the damaged tracks of dead grass come back, or is there something I need to do to bring back the grass?
Yeah, that was a pretty popular picture that I got sent early this spring. And the grass will heal itself. What happened is they ran along under the cover of the snow right at the edge of the grass and just kind of wore a path in. As the weather warms up, that grass will fill back in.
All right. And let's go back to the phones. Anna is on the line in Port Byron, Illinois. Hi, Anna.
Hi. I have a question about pepper seeds. I have a little grow rack in my house. It's kind of like homemade. We planted pepper seeds a couple weeks ago, and they're up, but they just look really sad. I try to keep them, like, not so dry, but they just, they look bad.
Right. So, you know, and they do look, sometimes they're a little wimpy right when they come up, and that's okay. Do you have them under like a supplemental light or near a window?
Yeah, they're under a light. And we have like little chains on it. It's a little fluorescent light. We try to get like the most lumens we could find. And we try to like lower it so they're closer to the light, but they just look puny, bad.
Right. Yeah, so I would have that as close to the plants as possible. That will help. I might let the seedlings dry out just a little bit in between waterings, and then you might even think about a little bit of fertilizer the next time you water. Very dilute, but a little bit of fertilizer the next time you water. It's also time to start thinking. Yeah, just like a Miracle-Gro, general fertilizer. And it's also probably time to start thinking about, you know, maybe if you get to two or three sets of true leaves, transplanting those up into a slightly larger container and giving them a little more light, and then make sure you acclimate them before you plant them outside. So it's okay that they look a little wimpy right now. Pepper a little slow sometimes, but just baby them, give them as much light and not too much water, not totally dry, kind of that somewhere in between, and I bet they'll be okay.
All right, Anna, good luck with that. And since we're on the subject of starting seeds, from Jacob, I'm starting asparagus from seed in seed trays. Should I thin the starts to one baby spear per seed cell or let all 2 to 5 grow?
I might let a couple grow, but I would do some thinning. 5 in a cell is probably way too much, but I might let a couple so that I could just see which one's more vigorous and then thin a little bit later so that I get the most vigorous ones. Remember, asparagus, there are male and female types on this one. This is a dioecious plant. Yeah, so in planting an asparagus patch from these seedlings, you're going to have a mix of that kind of male and female, which is kind of cool. So you will continually have seed, I guess is what I'm saying.
All right, and that's kind of tricky to do, isn't it, starting asparagus from seed?
It is. It is. So if we've got some good germination and you're getting 2 to 5 in a cell, well done.
Right. Mm-hmm. Pat yourself on the back. I mean, birds do it really well in rural ditches, but they excel at a lot of things that are hard for humans. All right. Here's a question from Nancy for you, Adam. I have two large areas around 16-year-old trees. They're raised above the surrounding turf grass. The area was intended to have some other perennial plants and a few remain, but the area has a lot of grass around the borders. Last year, I dug lots out, but it's back this spring. How do I get the grass out so I can plant some ground cover plants and not harm the tree?
Yeah, that's a good challenge there. I think you're probably going at the right method there of digging out the grass, and you're going to have to be persistent on it. Sometimes putting a little bit of an edger in there as well would help, especially if it's Kentucky bluegrass or something like that, that would send a rhizome underground to send up another plant. So maybe some sort of a barrier would help also prevent that grass from moving in there.
All right, and she actually brought that up. That's her follow-up question, saying that she's considering buying a heavy-duty edger to groove around this and other ornamental beds. But how deep would it need to go to keep grass from going under the edging blocks?
Yeah, typically most of the grasses that we have, 3 inches is plenty deep, and that would keep them out.
All right. Here's a question from Tamara in Iowa City. I'm looking for a line of trees for a windbreak for in town that would go past a sidewalk and be narrow but tall. Also would start these very small. So where could I possibly get saplings affordably? That's the harder part of the question, but let's start with what might go well there, Cindy.
So, you know, usually for kind of in-town windbreaks, and if you want something that's not huge, arborvitae is one of those that come to mind very quickly that might make a nice windbreak. Know that it's going to have sometimes some kind of browning on that north or northwest exposed side as well. So evergreens are usually what we recommend for windbreaks, but you can use many other things too. So those willows, deciduous willows might be another option.
I know that Mark Vitash is always recommending the Techne arborvitae because
right.
It is so tolerant that he convinced me to plant a windbreak of Techne arborvitae at my house, also in Johnson County, and it's really held up and grown really fast, and they sell them fairly small. So, I mean, that's not going to break the bank.
I know it's not. You're probably not going to get that arborvitae as a bare root like you might with some other deciduous things, but with a conifer, an evergreen like an arborvitae, you get a better windbreak effect because it's evergreen, right? So it's there. And you're right. Arborvitae and Techne is a great cultivar of arborvitae. That's where I would start.
All right. And we'll see if we can squeeze this one in from Cheryl. I've bought rosemary plants, but I have trouble keeping them alive. The last one lasted longer as I watered it more sparingly, but it also dried up and died last fall. Any tips?
Yeah, I keep killing rosemary too. This one's a little bit temperamental. It likes it consistently moist, but well drained. So you've got to find that right balance between when to water it, but it's not staying too wet, and when to allow it to dry out, but it's not staying too dry. And plenty of sun. And if you can find that right balance, then let me know so that I can grow rosemary.
All right, Cindy Haynes, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And Adam Tomes, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Adam Tomes, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. We will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.